25th episode of Season 4 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday the 26th of April 2011, and in this episode we're going to have the next exciting instalment of the Ubuntu podcast quiz, and we're going to interview Victor Balau about Ubuntu certification. We will of course cover the latest news, events, a bit about Ubuntu, a command line lerve, and we're going to go over your feedback. I'm Tony, and with me this week at the moment there are just two shiny faces looking at me. Hopefully there will be a third shiny happy face looking in my direction before too long. Alan is currently outside. So I've got Mark and Laura with me. How are you doing, guys?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Okay, Laura, what have you been up to lately? Do tell us.
Well, in a follow-up from last week's status, I actually got SPSS installed on Ubuntu.
Oh, this is your statistics package, isn't it?
Yes, the statistics package for university, and it's a proprietary piece of software. Before people say there is a PSPP free GNU type version.
So why don't you use that one?
Because it doesn't do a lot more than descriptive statistics and graphs, as far as I can remember. Yeah.
It's easy for you to say.
Yes, so anyway, the kind of
something
cool,
about giraffes.
The cool part of it is that the technical support team is mainly geared up for Windows and possibly Mac, and yet they went off and found me the DVD that nobody had clearly ever asked for before. And not only that, but the guy burnt me the DVD and then sat and install tested it and wrote me a load of instructions with screenshots on Ubuntu.
That is nice.
Because I told him it was Ubuntu I wanted, and it was brilliant.
That's above and beyond, isn't it?
It was. I was really impressed. And he emailed to check it was all right.
Oh, that's very good of him.
Yeah.
So what about you, Mark?
I've been learning how to do automated unit testing.
Ooh.
Ooh, what's that about? It sounds exciting. Surely it must be.
Basically, unit testing is where you test an individual piece of code to make sure it does what it should do. And automated unit testing is where you write some code to test your code for you.
Okay.
Which sounds really convoluted and over the top, but it means that if you then change some of your code, you can just rerun the tests in one click and check that you haven't then introduced any errors like to other bits of the system accidentally.
So does it take you a lot longer to write all the tests than it would do to risk breaking it, I guess? Is it worth doing?
Well, if I didn't write the tests, then I'd have to do the tests manually. So all in all, it doesn't take a lot longer. Because I'd still have to create all of the test data, and I'd still have to enter it, and I'd still have to test the output.
Well, that's fair enough, I suppose.
So, and it means that I then never have to do that bit again because I've already automated it.
So I suppose it's in some ways an effort saving device and probably means better quality code coming out.
That's the whole idea. It means that like your future review cycles can guarantee better quality code without you then having to go and do the whole suite of tests manually again.
Just takes a bit more discipline initially.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so have you had difficulty persuading people to let you get on and do this, or have you just gone and done it?
Well, it was the holidays at work, so no one was there to bother me. So I thought, right, well, I've got the opportunity, I'll learn this, and then I'll be able to just do it whenever I need to.
You taught him well, Tony.
Just do things when nobody's looking. So are there particular packages for doing that?
Languages tend to have their own frameworks to do it, so I'm using one for PHP called Simple Test. Which is the one that's built into Moodle, which is the system I'm developing on top of.
But there are presumably other different frameworks if you're working in different environments.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, Ruby on Rails has one built into it, and various other, well, most other languages probably have one or two that are widely used.
Well, I've been not doing a huge amount of computer stuff. I've done some headshots for a couple of friends of mine who are actors or looking to get back into acting. So with my photography hat on, I've been, well, not a literal, I've been taking some headshots of them. And I know that Alan has been playing with Bitcoin. Unity 2D, which is the 2D version of Unity that will run on low-end
hardware. Oh, yeah, I've had a quick play about with that.
How's that?
It's like Unity, but a bit less
flatter.
Yeah, it doesn't try and burn your retinas off quite so much.
And Alan has also been sucked back into Facebook, it says here.
Yes, I noticed he added me as a friend.
Added me as a friend.
I wasn't sure whether to accept or not.
No, well, he's not here, so we can say
he finally married his wife.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good of her.
Yeah.
Good of him.
Not
so much.
Presumably she accepted.
Well, you'd have to hope. Okay, so we're going to start the show now with the interview with Victor Palau from the Ubuntu certification scheme.
Hello, we've got Victor Palau, who's involved in the Ubuntu certification scheme. Hi, Victor.
Hi, hello.
So, what can you tell us about Ubuntu certification? What changes are coming up?
So, we are doing quite a bit on the next cycle. So, one of the things I wanted to talk to you today about was this new concept of Ubuntu friendly. So, you've probably seen the Ubuntu certification program before. If not, you can find it on the Ubuntu.com website. But basically, there we list systems that we test and certify internally within Canonical. We do that quite regularly. That requires that we have to have the system, and it's a bit intrusive. So we wanted to reach out to the community and allow people to do something similar by running the test tools that are included with Ubuntu. So at the moment you can do that, but it doesn't really lead to much. So we're coming up with a proposal for the next cycle to, you know, during ORIC to launch a community program where people can submit their tests and the tests can be evaluated, and, you know, we can come up with a list of systems that works just out of the box with Ubuntu.
Okay, so the old scheme was called Ubuntu Ready, and the new one's hopefully going to be called Ubuntu Friendly, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, Ubuntu Friendly is like a working title. We needed to call it something. I think we like the spirit of Ubuntu Friendly, but I don't know whether we will stick with that at the end. Ubuntu Ready, it's a commercial program that we run today within Canonical, and by commercial program means that you do have to pay to participate. Wow. And it's also self-testing. So what we rely is on manufacturers of systems to do a test and submit it to us, and, you know, then we look at the results and say, okay, did it pass or not?
Okay.
This got a few problems, so what we really want to do is ramp down Ubuntu Ready and move to something where everybody can participate. So and just focus on Ubuntu Certified as a commercial solution.
Yeah, so what were the problems with the existing system? Was it that not enough OEMs were interested in participating, or was it that it wasn't a reliable enough system of certification?
Yeah, it's less about the amount of people, more about what we were saying by saying Ubuntu Ready.
Right.
You know, we aren't able to keep up the testing in terms of Ubuntu Ready because we depend on the manufacturer. So every time there's an update.
Right, yeah.
And at the moment it's happening every 2 weeks, and we don't know whether that system still works or not.
Mm.
It also, the idea was that it was a fairly do-it-yourself approach to it, but it kind of requires still a lot of support. So we thought also maybe from a user point of view, it could be a bit confusing if you go to Ubuntu.com and you find Ubuntu Ready and Ubuntu Certified and trying to understand the difference. So all in all, you know, Ubuntu Certified, it's what we want to go forward as the commercial offering. So if you're looking into buying, you know, 20,000 systems for your company and you want to make sure they run with Ubuntu and they get tested for each update and so on, you should go for a Ubuntu Certified system. So we're trying to make it simpler from that point of view.
Right.
But we recognize that there is a need for people to be able to express whether they think the system works or not, and to do that in a public manner. So we'll start to look at the chances of Ubuntu Ready, and then we kind of thought about, well, there's no real reason why this should be a commercial project, or why it shouldn't be open to anyone in the community to participate.
Okay. So as this is a blueprint, it's not definitely going to go ahead, or is it likely to go ahead?
I would like it to go ahead. as a blueprint, you know, what it really is a proposal to be discussed at UDS.
Okay.
And, you know, what we're not going to do is kind of roll up the solution if people at UDS think it's a crazy idea and or there's a better way of doing it. So we are definitely open to feedback. We hope the feedback is positive and we do implement it during ORIC.
Okay.
So if I'm a community member and I've gone out and bought myself a shiny new laptop and I have installed Ubuntu on it and I want to let people know what works and what doesn't work, what are the sort of things I'd have to do to participate in what you currently see as the new Ubuntu-friendly scheme?
So it should be fairly simple for you to participate. And if you look today at your system, you will say that there is a way of submitting test results within Ubuntu.
Is that the system testing utility?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, right.
So the idea would be that we would plug in into that system, mm-hmm. and, you know, obviously improve it so it fits with what we're trying to do here. But there will be the same concept that, the tools that you need to do the testing comes from the ISO, and you're able to then run this utility or an improved version of this utility, and the results get submitted into a open website that then you can see what's happening there.
So you won't even have to install Ubuntu in order to be able to do it. You can do it from the live CD.
So you would probably need to install it. So it really depends on what system you have. So there are things like if you need to install certain drivers or proprietary drivers with additional drivers or utility, you may not be able to do it from the live CD.
That's a good point, actually, about proprietary drivers and things, because if some people consider compatibility to be only true compatibility if it's entirely a free software stack, if you haven't got the NVIDIA proprietary drivers or wireless drivers that are proprietary. Have you any thoughts about what sort of approach Ubuntu Friendly will take to compatibility? Do we say hardware is compatible even if it needs a binary firmware blob or a proprietary driver?
So I think as long as it's clear to the user of that is trying to decide whether should I buy this system or not, that it needs that, then people can take their own decision whether that's something they want to go forward or not. There's also maybe possible to have two kind of ratings for the ones that require this or not. How we do it in the certification, want to certify it, is that, you will have a note saying, you need to install these drivers. Sometimes it works most of the cases, but I don't know, maybe suspend and resume doesn't work, so you need to install this driver if you want that functionality. So, it's something we make available through the Ubuntu distro. So I think it needs to be part of the Ubuntu programs, but then it should also be very clear for whoever is participating or making a decision based on that information, that they know what they're getting themselves into.
Is there a worry about the quality of the data and quality of the feedback from community members? It will be perhaps in some ways a less controlled process under the new scheme?
It's a worry from what point of view, that it's not accurate?
Yeah, that it's misleading or it's just not been, the tests haven't been run properly or something.
Sure, so I think any system can be gamed or had pitfalls, right? So my approach to that is we need to build a feedback loop for the community and the users, mm-hmm. to say, actually, this information is not accurate. And then we can review it. So, part of what I mentioned about improving the system tells utility is that quite a lot of it today depends on the user. So we can do some improvements to reduce that, and it's much more test-driven algorithm. So it's a tool that does the testing and avoid as much human error as possible. But there's always going to be the case where the data is not 100% accurate.
And
as long as we can provide a way for people to tell us that and it can be corrected, that's as good as we can do, really.
Cool. Are there any concerns about people's privacy around the... So, for instance, if someone runs the utility on their system, making sure that there's no way of identifying their personal system as the one that ran the tests when it submits the data?
Right. So, yes, I mean, we need to make sure that is the case. So that's the sort of thing where I would like it to be... something that people contribute and look at what we're doing. So one of the things that I've been discussing with the certification team is that make sure anything that we do, any tools that we use, even the tools in the website to analyze what tests are good or bad, are all available as open source projects within Launchpad. So you know, people can see what is being collected and raise concerns and, you know, even contribute fixes.
Yeah.
We asked our community if they had any questions for you. We told them that you were going to come in and do an interview for us. One of the questions we had was, what does something being Ubuntu friendly really mean? Does it mean that every piece of hardware in, say, a netbook is going to work? Or does it mean that just certain aspects which are regularly tested are compatible? Things like, I don't know, Bluetooth chips or thumbprint readers that aren't part of the obvious things that you might check in the first iteration. Is it going to be a thorough test, or is it just a subset of commonly used bits of hardware?
I think it's going to be a set of commonly used hardware, right? Within reason, so I would see this initiative with the test that we use for certification. So one thing to take into account is not all the systems have the same hardware.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, you know, obviously you will have to see what your system has, first of all. Secondly, they may not be... I think there is like two or three different categories of hardware compatibility that you may be interested as a user. So there are things that you definitely want working, and they're kind of maybe a core set of functionality that anything to be classified as Ubuntu friendly. You may want to make sure it works, like, you know, if it's a laptop, the trackpad and, you know, the screen and so on. There are other ones which, if they don't work, you would like to know about. So maybe you want to know if the SD card reader works or not. I'm making it up. Or, you know, if the system hibernates or not. That's one that always comes up, which is this. A lot of people think, some people think it's a key use case. Some people don't really care about it. So I think as long as you tell people, then they know what they get in. And the other ones that are not so critical for people to have to test, or, you know, things like the finger reader scan, it's going to require somebody to put their finger in there. So, you know, sort of manual intervention, and it's open to the debate whether it really that's a killer use case of a system. So I would hope that we have those three categories, things that we won't test because, you know, you may want to know by searching on the forums or asking people that maybe have participated in the Ubuntu Friendly program. Things that you know for sure that will work, and things that if they don't work, you would be, you would know by looking at the report.
Cool. Am I right in thinking that if, say, someone had a piece of hardware which wasn't tested, then there'd be a way of them creating a test and perhaps submitting it to the project?
Yes, correct.
Cool.
It would be. You know, then when access, you know, we'd really encourage that. We just need to understand what sort of test we want there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, we don't want for someone to submit a test to have to do 20 hours of intensive testing, maybe Friday.
Yeah.
Season,
yeah.
Right? Cool. Okay. So you're going to be talking about this at UDS. What sort of feedback are you looking for on this proposal before UDS or at UDS itself?
So we're looking really for, you know, first of all, a sanity check. You know, is this reasonable, and does it make sense? And second of all, you know, people that want to participate on defining this program going forward. I think UDS is an important milestone, but we're not going to get everything nailed down then.
Yeah.
I would really like to have these people that are enthusiastic about this sort of initiatives to participate with us in kind of regularly on reviewing what we're doing and giving us direction.
Excellent. Well, the blueprint we'll put a link to in our show notes, which was submitted by a friend of the show, David Murphy, or Schwuck, as we like to call him. And hopefully you will have a productive discussion about the Ubuntu-friendly scheme at UDS. Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on and talking to us.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Victor. Bye-bye. Right.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Time for the news.
Flock, the social media web browser based on Mozilla Firefox, has been discontinued as of today. Zynga, the creators of Farmville, who acquired the Flock team in January, have said that development may still continue as a community project.
Now, Flock was this all-singing, all-dancing Web 2.0 fork of Firefox, wasn't it?
Basically, yeah. It was supposed to integrate all the social media sites and social networking sites into the browser.
Because what Firefox needed was more stuff.
Have you ever used it?
No.
Have you?
No.
Do you think Colin has?
He probably has at some point. I'm sure he would have downloaded it at some point and given it a go.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I didn't know that the people who made Farmville had bought the browser.
No,
that was really weird. If you think
they
somebody
bought it and then 4 months later decided that it wasn't worth it, or
yeah,
they just wanted the developers.
It's a bit like the developers of Angry Birds buying a company that makes iPhone aerials or something. It's a kind of two or three layers of abstraction away from each other.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Humble Bundle Inc. have released their third bundle of cross-platform games under a pay-what-you-want scheme. The five games are available for Linux, Windows, and Mac. As usual, Linux users have proved that they are willing to pay the most.
Yeah, more than Mac. No, more people doing it than Mac.
Yeah, or at least a greater proportion of the money raised was from Linux than Mac. And
okay,
the average spend was about twice the amount with Linux than it was on Windows.
So what games are in this bundle?
It's a group of games by a games developer called Frozen Byte. So I think they're fairly old games, but they've been updated to make sure they run on all modern systems, and a couple which they never actually properly released as well.
And the DRM-free.
Excellent.
Oracle has announced that they'll stop offering a commercial version of OpenOffice.org and it will be released as a community project. A spokesperson for Oracle said that it believed the software would be best managed by an organisation focused on serving the broad constituency on a non-commercial basis.
I'm glad they were so quick to realise that.
Yeah, absolutely. They haven't really, not trying to bolt that, but that stable door too far after the horse has bolted. The idea of this was that people were asking for OpenOffice to be released to the community. Oracle didn't do it. They all forked it and formed LibreOffice. And now Oracle said, well, we don't really want it anyway.
But there's thought that they might keep hold of the trademark.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably would let something that might be have some commercial value in future.
So yeah,
they'll hang on to. But again, OpenOffice wasn't part of what Oracle wanted when they bought Sun.
It was just
kind of collateral damage, really, unfortunately. Sad but true.
Yahoo has joined the Linux Foundation, the non-profit consortium dedicated to fostering the growth of Linux. Yahoo's involvement in the foundation will include participation in initiatives surrounding cloud computing and virtualization.
Woohoo! Oh, Yahoo! planning that one for a while. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah.
It's always good news to have more people like... Well, Yahoo are a weird company because they almost were going to be bought by Microsoft on several occasions.
Yeah.
So it's interesting they're now joining the Linux Foundation. You'd have to hope that means that maybe they're not going to be bought. But we shall see.
Indeed.
Recent outages in Amazon's Elastic Computing Cloud, or EC2, have highlighted the risks of using cloud hosting for critical services. While users of Foursquare suffered a minor inconvenience, one monitoring company became unable to track the ECG signals of cardiac patients.
Which isn't good.
Allegedly.
Well, yeah, there's been some discussion about whether it's a hoax or not, but whether it's a hoax or not, it does still highlight the problem that if you're going to host all your stuff in the cloud, you need to have a pretty solid disaster recovery backup system.
Yes, you need two clouds, really, don't you? And you have to wonder how many other people out there are storing stuff in the cloud that they perhaps shouldn't be, or they're not testing the reliability.
Yeah.
One of the reports I read sort of implied that because EC2 was so reliable, so many people thought that, well, actually it's not worth spending all this money on a redundant system because it was so unlikely to need it and it's never going to fall over. And then, of course, it does, and it's not just down for 5 minutes, it's down for several days, and people can't cope.
And we've got some events. The Ubuntu UK local release party for Natty is on the 28th of April at the Porterhouse in London.
Yeah, we haven't really mentioned this, but Natty's out in 2 days.
Oh, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, so if you're around London, you want to go along to the release party and see a lot of Ubunteros, perhaps having a beer or two.
Is that what we're called now?
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. Bar Camp Blackpool is on October the 15th in Blackpool.
Really?
It's
you
a bar
got
camp.
That from the name, did you? That's quite a way away, but
yeah.
you know, good to have some notice about these events. You can't just turn up at short notice. Southeast Linux Fest, we heard from them before, and they've sent us another trailer, which we are going to play now.
The third annual Southeast Linux Fest is happening Friday, June 10th through Sunday, the 12th, at the Spartanburg Marriott in Spartanburg, South Carolina. There will be speaker tracks on all 3 days on a wide range of interests. In addition, there will be several affiliate events on Friday and Sunday. Events include certification testing for BSDA and LPI, training in web technology at Drupal Camp, Puppet Labs Training Day, Build Your Own Cloud Day, and a two-day UbuCon. There will also be BOF tracks and a LAN party on Saturday, as well as our pre- and after-parties, too. Come join us on June 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Southeast's largest Linux Fest and elevate your game. It's free to attend. Be sure to come early for the talks on Friday. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
There we go. That's very interesting. It wasn't quite the same accent that we had last time around. And finally, Mark.
We have a small amount of news about OBCamp. We announced it on the last show, and all of the tickets have gone within 5 days. That's all 200 of them.
Yeah, that's
so
amazing.
That's amazing. Brilliant. So thank you so much for your interest. Indeed. It really does make us feel good and make us realise how worthwhile our effort is.
Yes, and we had such an overwhelming response. I mean, we never thought it would all go into in 5 days. We are working to get more tickets available, so keep an eye on Twitter, keep an eye on Identica, listen to the show, so Linux Outlaws and this show, and you'll find out more information as and when we can make more tickets available.
Please don't book something else that weekend thinking that you can't come.
Yeah, keep the weekend free, and hopefully we'll see you at OBCamp.
Now for command line love. This is a command that Mark found recently and used from the Debian archiving guide. So say you're moving files to a new partition and you want to copy absolutely everything that's in the current directory and subdirectories, including hidden files, symlinks and everything else, with permissions intact. It's a version of it's the find command with a whole load of flags on it.
That we're not even flags.
We're just not going to bother reading out right
basically
now.
Basically, it runs find in the current directory and recurses through everything and basically gets the name of every item in every directory and subdirectory.
And it pipes
and
things.
And it pipes
it
into CPIO, which copies it exactly to somewhere else.
So did you use this in anger, Mark?
I did. I've been recovering my GuruPlug server after a hard drive that was sold to me by an unscrupulous businessman.
Who was that?
I think he might have been called Wonly. No, hold on. I just worked out how that's come out. I'm not going to say that.
You might take me back to my school days.
Basically, I wanted to move the home partition, which was basically on the built-in NAND flash, to an external storage device. So you basically create your partition and mount it and then go into your home directory and run this command.
Right.
And that way it makes sure it copies absolutely everything and doesn't like leave hidden files behind and symlinks and stuff.
Okay. So we'll put that command in the show notes.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to see them online.
Yeah.
You've got to remember to specify your own kind of target directory.
The last command is the important bit.
Is it a very quick process or is it going to take forever?
It's about as quick as copying normally is. It depends on the speed of your disks and stuff, but I mean it depends on how much you're copying and so on, but it's about as fast as you'd expect it to be.
Cool. Okay, well, we've got a couple of seconds, so it's time to say hello to Mr. Alan Pope.
Turn my microphone on now, have you? I've been sat here shouting for the last half an hour and nobody heard me.
We had a very good start to the show, and I said what you did. I read out your notes from what you've been doing last week.
Oh, excellent.
So you can expect lots of Facebook friend requests now.
Excellent.
From
good.
The internet.
Great.
Cool. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to play a little bit of music, and then we'll be back with our quiz.
Okay, here we go with the next installment of our fabulous Ubuntu quiz.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so this time I am the quiz master. This is the third round of a quiz we've done, and I won the previous two, but I'm obviously out of the running for this one because I'm chairing it. So Laura is in the running, Mark is in the running, and Alan is in the running. So the quiz this time is called Who Wants to Be a Massive Ubuntu Geek?
No millionaires.
Legally different. Well, there's only one.
Well, yes.
And he's not playing. No. So legally different from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, obviously. The format is this. Obviously, we haven't got a full hour to do the quiz. So each contestant is going to be asked a series of questions which start easy but get harder. Each question has four possible answers. For each question they get right, the contestant gets a point.
Hooray!
Remember, they do start easy. Each contestant has two lifelines, which you can use at any time. The lifelines are to go 50-50 on the answers, so we'll take away two wrong answers, leaving you with one right answer, one wrong answer, and ask IRC.
Excellent.
Which, like this, which does mean you have to not look at IRC until you use your lifeline, okay. So we will be asking
Alt
you to...
tab.
Yeah, we will be asking you to sort of avert your gaze or close your laptop lid. When a contestant gets a question wrong, you're out of the competition. There's a maximum of six questions to get to the prize that...
It's not a million.
That is not £1 million.
It's being a geek.
It's not... Good, yeah, good exactly. Prize. So, I will start with... Well, who wants to start? It doesn't matter who starts.
Yeah, go on then.
Okay, let's start with Alan. Let's get a chance to get your voice warmed up a bit. Okay, so, Alan.
Oh, you didn't license the music then?
No, not quite.
Turn the lights down a bit now.
There will be some noises coming up a bit later.
Okay.
So, question one for Alan Pope. The others, you've got to be give him due respect. who founded the Ubuntu project? Was it A, Mark Wahlberg? Was it B, Mark Shuttleworth? Was it C, Mark Twain? Or was it D, Mark Antony?
I'm going to go for B, Mark Shuttleworth.
Okay, so you're saying B, Mark Shuttleworth. Yay, you got it right.
Wow.
Well done.
Are you going to play that every time I get one right?
Well, let's see how long that takes us.
Right.
Okay. You've got the first question right. You have 1 point, and you have both your lifelines intact. Next question. Fetch Mail developer Eric S. Raymond is famous for his love of what? Is it A, Steve Ballmer? Is it B, cathedrals? Is it C, blancmange? Or is it D, guns?
He wrote The Cathedral and the Bazaar, didn't he? But no, it's guns, isn't it? Yes.
Let's find out. You said D, guns.
Okay, that's old already.
You are still in both lifelines. Question number three. Which version of GNOME is included in Ubuntu 10.10? Is it A, 2.30, B, 2.31, C, 2.32, or D, 2.33?
In 10.10?
Yeah, the current release for the next 2 days of Ubuntu.
Oh, man. I reckon 11.04 is 232, so 10.10 must be 230, which was the first one. A, is it?
So,
A, 230.
You're saying A?
If 230. A was 230, yes.
Oh, the tension's unbearable.
A is 230.
So I'm going for A then, 230.
Is that your final answer?
The music's changed, which makes me think it might not be the right answer. Yeah, that's my final answer.
Okay. You said A to version 2.30.
I shouldn't be laughing. Yes. Where do you get the timpani from?
It's in the garage.
Oh.
It's only his life doing this.
Aww.
Sorry. You got it wrong. The version in 10.10, which I'm running here, so I can see it's true, is 2.32.0. There you go. You will never find out what the prize was. So you got 2 points correctly, and you used both your lifelines.
No, I didn't.
No, sorry, you still preserved both your lifelines for all the good that, did you? Right, next up, we've got Mr. Mark Johnson.
Hello.
Okay, Mark, are you ready?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Are you sure?
Well, vaguely.
Okay, so, question number one from Mark. Who is Ubuntu's community manager? Is it A, John O'Coleman? Is it B, John McCririck? Is it C, John O'Bacon? Or is it D, Eggs and Bacon? Take your time.
I think it's C, John O'Bacon.
You think you're saying C? Is that your final answer?
Yes.
Let's see whether you're right. Congratulations, Mark. You have 1 point.
Hooray.
You're only 1 point behind Alan. Question number two. Richard Stallman wrote which text editor? Is it A, Vi? Is it B, Nano? Is it C, Emacs? Or is it D, Pyrum?
I'm going to go with C, Emacs.
Are you sure?
I don't know. I think I might use my 50-50 here.
Really? Okay. Right. In which case, I'm going to take away two wrong answers.
Okay.
And the answers I'm taking away are Pyrum, D, and Vi, A. Right. So the two answers you've got to choose between are Nano and Emacs.
Emacs.
You're going to say Emacs, final answer? Emacs.
Yeah.
Well done. You got that one correct. You used one lifeline, so you've still got Ask IRC as a lifeline left to you.
Right.
I'm just going to mute him on IRC.
Okay, so the next question is, how much free storage space does one get on Ubuntu One? Is it A, 1 gigabyte, B, 2 gigabytes, C, 3 gigabytes, or D, 4 gigabytes?
I'm going to go with B, 2 gigabytes.
That's confident. He's straight in there with that answer. Okay, is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
Okay, let's see whether you're right. Okay, right. Fourth question. One lifeline left, which is Ask IRC.
Right.
Which of these is not an application available in the Ubuntu archives?
Oh, God.
Is it A, Galculator? Is it B, Xtcalc? Is it C, FreeCalc, or is it D, Calculate with a Q at the front?
Right, I'm pretty sure Calculate. I know the second two are, I think.
Okay.
So hold on, what were the options again, sorry?
The options are A, Calculator with a G.
Right.
B is Xtcalc, right. E-X-T.
Yeah.
C-A-L-T. C is FreeCalc, and D is Calculate with a Q.
Yeah.
So calculate, something like that.
Okay. I think it's probably A, but I'm not sure, so I'm going to use my other lifeline and ask ILC.
Okay, so now...
This will be a laugh.
We're now 10 seconds behind.
Right. That's right. Fine. Leave the tension music to play for a minute.
Right.
So, is anybody going to come up with the right answer?
Hold on.
Actually typing the question. Someone in IRC just went, oh, what was the question? Mark's feverishly typing it.
The question is, which of these is not an application available in the Ubuntu archives? Is it Calculator with a G, Xtcalc, E-X-T-Calc? Is it FreeCalc, or is it Calculate with Q?
Which one of those are people are currently sat on packages.ubuntu.com?
Yeah. To be fair, of all the things...
I've had one response, which...
Graham Binns, don't trust him.
Which does back me up. Okay, it's the only response I'm getting in. It backs up what I thought anyway, so I'm going to go with it.
They're all checking.
Alan Bell just checked the one, which I know is definitely in there, but I might have spelt it wrong. So I'm going to go with Calculator.
So you're going with...
Two people have now said a different one. No, take that. Take that as his answer, please.
Final answer?
Calculator.
Three people have calculator. Now said the other one.
You're not going to change your mind? In fact, the three people have said that there's something else?
Well, they've all said something else, and I know that the other one is because I've used it.
Oh.
Okay. So your final answer is A, Calculator.
Yes.
Let's find out.
No.
Thank you, IRC.
Now, that might be deliberate sabotage, yes. Really, on the behalf of the good denizens.
I'll pay them all.
Did you
later.
Ask them to do that before I look?
#ubuntu-uk-podcast.
They're all my sock puppets, all of them.
Well, there we go. Okay.
Do I get to know what the correct answer was?
The correct answer was actually free calc.
Oh.
Yeah, the others are all packaged in 10-10.
So how many points is that?
So that was, I think, three
Which
points.
Which puts me in the lead, does it not?
well, yes, actually, as it happens, it does.
Grim.
Well, you never know.
If you hadn't listened to those loonies in the
IRC
channel,
I would
never
have guessed free calc.
You might, anyway. You might have guessed free calc. Okay, so Laura, your turn now. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, the first question is, Ubuntu is a word from which language? Is it A, English? Is it B, German? Is it C, the Bantu languages of Southern Africa? Or is it D, Python? Take your time. Don't rush.
What are the answers again?
Is it A, English? Is it B, German? Is it C, the Bantu languages of Southern Africa?
I just wanted to hear you say
Or is it D, Python?
C.
You're going with C, the Bantu languages of Southern Africa. Let's see whether you're right.
Who are those people cheering?
They're just outside. One of them's brought his timpani ring.
Right.
So you have both your lifelines still left intact. Yep. You have 1 point. So the second question. In which country was Linus Torvalds born? Was it A, the USA? Was it B, Sweden? Was it C, Norway? Or was it D, Finland?
D, Finland.
D, Finland. Are you sure?
Yes, because I once wrote an article in which I said it wasn't. I said it was Norway.
Well, at least you've got a good reason. I'll take your final answer of D, Finland. Well done. Okay.
Thank you.
2 points and two lifelines still intact.
At least it's kind of respectable now.
You are now tied with Alan and you're one behind Mark.
Okay.
So, three. Question three. What is the oldest supported version of Ubuntu, as in right now? Is it A, Dapper Drake? Is it B, Hardy Heron? Is it C, Karmic Koala? Or is it D, Gutsy Gibbon?
Can I go 50-50, please, Bob? Sorry, Tony.
Bob? okay, it shows how you haven't read the show notes. So, the two options I'm going to take away are Hardy Heron and Karmic Koala. So the two options you've got are Dapper Drake and Gutsy Gibbon. So you're looking for the oldest supported version of Ubuntu. You've still got one lifeline left, but the two options you've got are Dapper Drake.
Gutsy Gibbon.
And Gutsy Gibbon. Those are the two options you've got.
That was my answer.
Oh, sorry,
just
okay.
Preempting you.
You're saying Gutsy Gibbon is the oldest supported version.
Because I can't remember exactly what the show notes said about Dapper Drake.
Dapper Drake.
Dapper Drake.
Dapper Drake.
And Mark removed that entry.
That's very cruel of him. Your final answer is Gutsy Gibbon.
Yeah. It's a few letters ago.
For £1 million.
I'd do a bit more revision then. It's about to go out of service.
It is indeed just about to go out of support in the next few weeks. June, beginning of June, it goes out of support. So there we go. So Laura came out of that with 2 points. Mark came out of that with 3 points. And Alan came out of it with 2 points.
Hooray.
So Mark is this week's or this round's winner.
What do I get?
You get to have 1 point less than me in the overall leaderboard. That is what
just what
you
I
get.
Always wanted.
Yes, indeed.
I think I'd rather take the car, to be honest.
You can't have it.
Okay, so next time we're all together, we might have another round. And whose turn is it? It's going to be Laura's turn,
it's
isn't
be my
it?
Turn,
Laura's.
Yeah.
Everybody else has had a go at running a quiz, so you'll get to enjoy preparing that, as it were. Right, hang on a second. Talk amongst yourselves.
So, Alan.
You don't.
Oh, yeah.
How was your week?
You don't literally have to do that. Let's get on with the bit about Ubuntu.
It's the bit about Ubuntu. And in our first story, Jerry Carr, Canonical's marketing manager, has said that they are targeting casual Windows users with Natty, offering cloud-hosted trial installations. What does that mean?
It means you can go to a website and click a thing and then try out Ubuntu Natty without even having to download it, never mind install it.
Yes.
Which is quite cool. Nice.
It is. I tried it. And, yeah, it didn't work. Oh. But, but that was before they finished it. So, yeah, that'd be quite cool. It's like, you know, it comes up in a window, in a browser window, and you just try the desktop out, see what it looks like.
I'm trying to work out what casual Windows users are, though.
I guess people who use Windows because it's what came
casual.
With
people in flip-flops, you know, shorts, Hawaiian shirt, that kind of thing.
Waistband down.
Lean on.
Yeah, lean on your desk in a casual kind of way. Yeah, I guess, you know, people who use a computer as a tool. Not...
Recreationally.
Yeah.
One of the comparisons Jerry made in the article was the idea of Unity being like a first-person shooter environment where you have almost a dashboard that displays all the relevant information that you need to see in one screen, but it doesn't distract you from the main focus of the window and what you're actually doing in the middle of it, which is quite an interesting comparison. And I'm not sure whether the idea of comparing a desktop environment to a first-person shooter really works, but... Mm.
There is that tool you can get to delete files where you shoot them.
I remember that years and years ago. Hearing about that one. Okay, so the next thing in the bit about Ubuntu is that the Ubuntu manual team are looking for new authors and editors to work on a new manual called Getting Started with 11.04. If you're interested, take a look at the job openings. That's ubuntu-manual.org/jobs.
Yeah, I think this is an ideal time to have a new manual, given the UI has changed significantly since previous version. So it's a good idea to have a kind of quick start guide to what's going on.
Yeah, indeed.
And the Canonical design team have shared some details of their Unity usability tests.
Yeah, this was quite a surprise, wasn't it?
Yeah, so this is another little focus group they've done with, I think, 11 people, mixture of ages and demographics, as much as possible, because you can do with 11 people, and asked them to try out a set of tasks on Unity and to see whether they could manage to work out how to do it without any instruction, basically. Mm. And some of them worked quite well. They all managed to open a file.
Excellent.
Which is good. And some things were a bit more complicated.
Yeah.
And people were confused about what certain icons might do or might mean.
I think a lot of people have picked up on things like the fact that it crashed and people couldn't do fairly relatively simple things or navigate their way around the desktop under simple instruction. Mm.
Rightly so, really, because this was only done earlier this month. There won't have been a huge amount of change.
Well, they've done two. They did one back in April and one... back in October last year, I think.
Mm. Yeah, and the page actually has a nice comparison of how they got on with the tasks in October and how it's improved or not now. So most of the things have improved some way, but there are still obvious problems, which they are admitting. We know that these are problems.
Yeah, absolutely. It's no good just throwing a desktop out there and not having tried it on some people first.
Well, it's good to do proper usability testing.
Mm. It is. Yeah.
And have you read the analysis, Laura?
No.
Oh, okay. There's quite a detailed sort of analysis about the things that did and didn't work and whether they've been able to fix some of the problems by introducing new behaviours is quite bizarre, because there's a whole kind of thing of designing yourself out of a problem that you shouldn't have created in the first place. But we'll wait and see. Mm. I'm looking forward to trying all my applications with it and see whether it works.
Mm.
The Ubuntu Community Council have shut down the Sounder mailing list.
Did they? How dare they? The oppressors of free speech that they are, the Community Council.
Who would propose such an archaic...
yeah, that would be me.
So did we talk about this a little bit at some point in the previous shows? It's the sort of uncensored, unmoderated list.
Oh, not really. The list has been around for ages, and it was really a sounding board for people to discuss stuff. And if you look at some of the early posts, there were people discussing their experiences with Ubuntu and how they think things should improve. It was like an open discussion place, whereas more recently it's kind of turned into a place where 20 or 30 people can talk and argue about religion and politics, with a bit of Ubuntu thrown in here and there.
Yeah.
It's what it's felt like. and it just doesn't seem to be fulfilling the role that it had. So I proposed it. We took it to the community council. Community council voted and said, shut it down. So we did.
So is it actually now shut down, or has it got a grace period?
It's in emergency moderation, so you can't post to it. You can't do anything with it. And some of the people who were on that and didn't like the fact that the list shut down have set up a Google group where they can discuss the same stuff that they were discussing on Sounder, but without massive oppression from the community council down on them.
Oh, without it being as closely associated with the Ubuntu project as well.
Yeah, and amusingly, they've called their group Bike Shed.
which
did make me smile.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I'm not on the Sounder list, but I looked at the archive, and within the space of 1 month's archives, I saw so many posts there that would make me want to shut it down just from having read it. I know if it was a lug list, some of the topics there wouldn't be tolerated.
And there were some misconceptions about it, why it was shut down, and there were some people posting that it was Canonical shutting it down for business reasons.
Yeah.
And it totally wasn't at all anything to do with Canonical. It was, it just wasn't serving a useful purpose.
Cool. Well, hopefully enlightenment will spread.
Mm.
The German insurance firm LVM has switched 10,000 machines to Ubuntu.
Hooray.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of desktops and laptops.
Really? Yeah. Not servers. Wow.
And I think they're already using Ubuntu.
Yeah, they're already using it to some extent anyway, but this is a full-scale whole company, including their... So their HQ and their various smaller offices around.
And this isn't the kind of thing where they say they're going to do this in order to negotiate better license deals from Microsoft for Office and Windows, is it?
Well, let's hope not.
But they have actually deployed it. Is it to be deployed, or?
I believe it's, well, from what I read, it's sort of happening.
Right, okay. Well, that's good news.
Yeah, it's been announced. Canonical obviously involved, and it's been announced that it's going ahead.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Yeah, and that's the end of the bit about Ubuntu, but we've got a not about Ubuntu as well. Laura, tell us about that.
There's a blogger has posted an open letter to Richard Stallman advising him and the FSF to stop marginalising themselves.
This isn't something we don't hear very often. Hang on, that was a double negative.
Double negative.
Yeah,
we hear this a lot, don't we? I've seen another one recently, someone writing an open letter to the FSF saying, I just can't support what
you do. Well, this was directly in response to his recent tour and him saying, you should all be actively helping out the FSF in any way you can. He said, well, this is my help to them by giving them this advice.
Right, excellent.
Yeah.
Basically, his big point was that... it's childish to do things like he did in his talk, to say, refer to the Amazon Kindle as a swindle.
Yeah, totally.
I was reading the interview with him in Linux format, which has just been published in the most recent issue. Yeah. And he's brilliant, goes through all the stuff you'd expect him to, explains everything brilliantly, then mentions Windows Phony 7, and immediately no one's going to take it seriously, are they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fine if it's a quick aside in a pub or something like that, but it's a very public pronouncement to use that sort of terminology and language around. And he even responded to this blog post, apparently. And
Sort
of sent a little quick one-line reply back, because it was an open letter, so they did send it to him.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm skeptical of advice from people who disagree with what I stand for.
Oh, good.
Oh, great. Oh, marvellous. Oh, there we go.
We're quite clearly not listening to us then either. but you wonder how,
That's really very sad.
Yeah.
It's a resistance to taking on any new ideas.
Yeah.
It's not dissimilar to some of the other more extreme groups.
I can see why he's entrenched in the position that he is, having had it for 20-odd years. But equally, really, you've got to have some kind of open mind.
Yeah.
Or not, clearly.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's all we've got time for in the Not About and Bit About Ubuntu.
And now it's time for your feedback. And Joshua O'Leary posted a comment on our website to ask,
what software do you use to broadcast and record your podcasts? I often do audio editing and will find it useful to know what audio software you as a team would recommend.
If only we'd write a blog post about it.
Fortunately, I have done so. So you can go to tonywhitmore.co.uk, and if you look through the blog post that I've written in the last month or so, I did a series of about 5 blog posts that say all about how we produce and stream the podcast and record it and all that sort of stuff. So, go and check that out, and I'm sure we'll put a link to that in the
show. Surprisingly interesting reading.
Thank you, Alan. I do appreciate your surprise.
Carlos Ferreira has posted a comment on our website to say,
as a PhD researcher, I am actually finding that by hiding most of the clutter, Unity helps me focus on my work, although that might tell you more about me than about the strengths of the different desktop interfaces.
Yeah, I found that actually. I find myself doing the maximize stuff, move it onto a different desktop. You know, like Mark, you were saying, you do that. You maximize stuff, throw it onto a different desktop, and then switch between stuff when you want to focus on something. Previously, before Unity, I would really have an array of stuff sprayed all over two screens, and then just alt and tab and click on the window I wanted. It was really, really messy.
I try to, but I forget.
Yeah, I sometimes forget. I just
keep opening things on the same desktop.
I also forget where my terminals are, and I end up just opening a new one every time, because it's easier for me to do Control-Alt-T and open a new terminal than go hunting for the one that I had something in. So I just open a new one, and then when I double-click the terminal thing in the Unity, there's like 50 of them all over the place. I'm like, oops.
Fair enough.
Carlos also commented on the use and availability of free software in academia.
Frankly, besides R for statistical analysis, I'm yet to find anyone openly advocating free software, and I get puzzled looks from other end users whenever they happen to take a peek at my screen. IT support say they can't or won't help me if something goes wrong, because they're Microsoft certified and are more or less prepared to deal with anything Microsoft software throws at them, but they won't risk advocating free software, because most people will think it's just a cheap alternative and will complain as soon as there's any glitch. In other words, the degree of system locking goes well below considerations of cost.
Isn't that common everywhere, not just in academia?
I suspect so, although my experiences with academia were quite different in that there were lots of people using GNOME and Ubuntu wasn't around at that point, but you know, Red Hat and things like that.
Which departments?
I was in the physics department.
Yeah.
And so people were...
Nerds
and geeks, well, but they were able to use it. And
I was on a web development course, so it was hard to get away from it.
Yeah, but you know, it was out there, and people were able to use it in academia.
Yeah, I get the impression he's more in a department like mine, where it's using computers as a tool.
Yeah. And there's one guy whose job it is to help everybody out, and that's it.
Yeah, well, it seems a lot like I was saying at the beginning. This guy went to great lengths to install and test it on Ubuntu, but it clearly wasn't a common request. And I think it chimes quite well with what Carlos was saying. It's just people look at go, so what's Linux? And because it's not something they've come across.
Mm. Marcel Leroux wrote on our wall on Facebook,
I've loaded Ubuntu onto just about every laptop/box, young and old, and it just worked. Some older onboard sound cards played music in a slightly higher pitch, but that was easily solved with either an internal or external USB sound card. Uh-huh. All in all, Ubuntu just rocks.
Yeah, those sound problems don't go away, do they?
No, I've had the same sort of thing where the pitch is slightly out if you're playing back a file or you've recorded a file and it's slightly skew.
Yeah, right. I've never seen that.
Yeah, but again, only really on internal chips. Yeah. Mm. Put a plug in a decent USB external sound card and you're away.
Cool.
And finally, a little something from the Wing Commander.
Boyer Casher to the UK Loco Posse. Wing Commander, Sir Arthur Curmudgeon here, or MC Arthur to the WC, as I'm calling myself. Booyaka to you. But do excuse me if that's too rude. I have no idea what it means. Thanks to my nephew, I'm getting quite into this interweb thing. I've discovered free music. You're listening to World Ruled by Psychopaths by K Knot. They're some sort of modern beat combo, apparently. Reminds me of the noise of an aeroplane I used to fly right before it crashed. I'm told it's dubstep. Hold on, it's giving me a headache. Ah, that's better. It comes courtesy of Jamendo, which features Clapham Common music. No, that's not right. Creative Commons music. Yes. Released under a free license, you can pay the artist whatever you can afford. I tried sending them a postal order for 10 shillings and 6p, but they sent it back. Spiffing people. So you don't have to be a slave to the record companies anymore. Or as we used to say in the RAF, bandits at 12 o'clock. Now, what was I going to ask about your last podcasting thingy? Oh yes, Gerald. Is he your youth trainee or something? He seems to do an awful lot of work on the news segment of your program, but you never let him speak. Come on, Gerald. Speak up, lad. You can't be any worse than the rest of them. Well, that's all for now. Yours, the WC.
He gets madder each time.
Do you know what? When I retire, I hope I have enough time like he does.
Yeah, madder and longer each time, which is very, very good. Gerald lives in a little box just under the table here when we're recording.
Okay.
Bring
out the Gerald.
Bring out the Gerald. Yeah, and that's all of your feedback this time.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for listening. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including voicemail numbers and Twitter feeds, Facebook and IRC channels. Let us know what you think of the show or give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. Join us on Tuesday, the 10th of May, for our next live episode.
Yes, and hopefully, you know, Alan might be here the whole episode next time.
Yeah, and I won't get shouted at by your neighbours as I was today.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What were you doing?
Walking up her path.
Oh, right.
Apparently.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for causing us a little domestic grief on
that. Sorry. Sorry about
that. Coming here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, join us in 2 weeks' time and find out what Alan's been up to then. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.